We're under the covers on Afternoons.
If you're a woman, you want social themes, believable characters. You want plot suspense.
The strange story of the flowers had never been reported in the press.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife.
Come, we shall walk together.
I can honestly say it's one of the most enjoyable periods of my life.
Under the covers.
For generations, Peter Coombe has been telling kids to wash their faces in orange juice, and I'm not so sure whether that's excellent hygienic advice, but it is that kind of fabulous silliness that has led to him becoming one of Australia's most loved performers. And this year marks his 30th in the industry. He's just released his 13th album for children. It's called Quirky Berserky the Turkey from Turkey. And we're talking books with Peter on Under the Covers on Afternoons. Fabulous to talk to you, Peter.
Hi, Gillian. Very nice to talk to you too.
Now, 30 years as a children's entertainer and to be going for this long, you would imagine you have a real understanding of children. What do you remember about being a child yourself in Adelaide?
Well, I was very fortunate, Gillian, in having almost an idyllic childhood. I had two parents who obviously loved each other. They loved me. I loved them. It's almost storybook in a way. And I had a particularly happy childhood. I can't remember any major, you know, apart from the teenage stuff you tend to go through a bit, but any major things with my parents, got on pretty well with my brothers and sisters. So I guess I just consider myself extraordinarily lucky.
What's your earliest memory of reading?
Probably the book that really hit me with a, and I remember reading Enid Blyton books. That was the first thing I can remember, Enid Blyton, Secret Seven, Famous Five, etc. But the one that really hit me between the eyes was one of the old-fashioned type versions of Robin Hood. It was called Robin Hood and the Men of the Greenwood by a writer called Henry Gilbert. And I was really taken by the story, taken by the language, and also I was taken by the philosophy too. I thought that the notion of taking from the rich and giving to the poor wasn't such a bad idea. I mean, it's a very kind of, you know, simplistic sort of notion, but I guess I've sort of carried that a little bit into my own philosophy over the years.
And how did you go at school?
Not a voracious reader, but I enjoyed most of my school life. I didn't enjoy the latter parts of high school, but that was only because I was just in that era where if you had a brother who was very good at science and liked science and was going to be a GP, a doctor, well, it was just assumed the younger brother would be the same. And I suppose at the age of 15, I discovered my love of literature and of the English language. And also, I guess I was just beginning to feel that sense of loving music as well. But I was sort of, on my last year of school, I was doing math, physics and chemistry. And I have to say, I wasn't the remotest bit interested. I dropped English and Latin, which I loved both of them, and I was good at both of them. And I ended up doing subjects I didn't want to do. But the first, my primary years were lovely. I loved them.
And at that stage, when you are going through your teenage years and you can come across a book or an author that can really change the way you think, you're stretching out kind of mentally in all sorts of directions, I think. Was there one of those for you?
Yes, there was. I remember at the age of probably about maybe 18, I read Martin Luther's book called Strength to Love, and I just found it so inspirational. And I got really interested in the whole notion of pacifism, the whole thing about not being violent. And I think there were just messages for that today. And I really was inspired very much by that particular book, Strength to Love, by Martin Luther King. That led on to me loving, I guess, peace-type songs. I remember going to a Peter, Paul and Mary concert and hearing them sing their wonderful song, The Great Nandela, which most people don't know unless you're a big Peter, Paul and Mary fan like I was. It's a song about a pacifist. And so I guess that tied in together with the Martin Luther King book, Strength to Love.
Well, you always, because you've read a lot, obviously, but you've also written a lot, and we know you so well for your children's songs. Was that always the direction you wanted to take, or did you start elsewhere?
No, I started elsewhere. I was for the first, I guess, up to the age of 30 or even kind of early 30s, I was just writing adult songs. I went to Britain in 1977 and I really wanted to be the world's next Paul Simon. But I discovered there were about 2 million other guys who also wanted to be the world's next Paul Simon. And I suppose it was almost by accident, because I was doing this BBC television program called Music Time, I gradually started, and I had a teaching background anyway, a primary school teacher background, I started writing them children's songs, sending some of them back to the ABC in Sydney and getting a really strong response to them. So I think the idea was germinating even in England in the late 70s that maybe I had some particular ability to write for children. And I always loved children anyway. And I found that writing for children is just as hard as writing for adults anyway. It's not easier.
Why is
it
that?
It requires, if you're serious about it, it's a real craft. It's like anyone who writes a novel, who writes a screenplay, who writes a satirical piece of work. It requires work. You edit yourself. You're hard on yourself. You spend lots of time on it. It's not to say that sometimes a song doesn't fall out of nowhere, because they do. Newspaper Mama was a song that just came out of nowhere. I can't even tell you why I wrote it or how I did it. It just happened in a very short space of time. But most songs, if you're serious about melodies and serious about writing really nice lyrics, poetical lyrics, take time. And that's the way I think it should be.
We're Under the Covers on Afternoons.
Entertainer Peter Coombe is with us, Under the Covers on Afternoons. And your latest album, Quirky Berserky, the Turkey from Turkey. I had to practice that a bit. It's a tongue twist. What's the story?
It's a bit of a tongue twister, yes.
What's the story behind this album?
My wife came up with these two words. Her name's Carol. She came up with two words called just Quirky Berserky. I thought, that's a cute-sounding word. And then I discovered that the letter K is allegedly the funniest letter in the alphabet. And when I started thinking about it, it is. There are lots of words in the English alphabet with K that are whimsical, amusing, just sort of wry and dry and funny. And then I thought, well, Quirky Berserky has to be something or other. So continuing on the K idea, I decided he'd be not the turkey from New Zealand, not the turkey from Namibia, but the turkey from Turkey. And that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
And one of your grandsons was quite involved in this, I understand. He's a bit of a musical prodigy.
He is, and I can sort of say musical prodigy without just being a totally biased grandparent. I mean, I am a biased grandparent, obviously.
You should be too. Yeah.
Well, I am. He's the most gorgeous little guy. His name's Oliver, and we discovered that after I wrote this song called "Red Says Stop," which is a new song on the new CD, he was just singing it around the house. Carol would pick him up from childcare sometimes, and he'd be singing the back of the car. And I got this idea. Well, maybe he might sing the song on cue and I could record it with him as a duet. And I thought, well, being a three-year-old, you can't really direct three-year-olds necessarily. Nothing may happen. And so the first time we took him to the studio, nothing happened. I'd go, one, two, three, and he's meant to go, red says stop, yellow get ready. But the first number of times in the studio, I'd go, one, two, three, and there would be complete silence. So I thought, we're not going to get anything. We got the word stop at the end. But then Alice, my daughter, brought him back to the studio about a week and a half later. We thought, we'll just have one more go at it. The first time, one, two, three, complete silence. So I thought, right, nothing's going to happen. But the second time, he just suddenly did it. And then he got on a real kind of roll and did it three or four times. And we just picked two of the best takes. And we got this lovely recording of Red Says Stop with Ollie as a three-year-old singing. So that was quite a delightful experience.
Did you read to your children? And what sort of stuff?
My favourite book that I read to my children was a lovely little thing called Bears in the Night. It's almost like, if I translate into a song, it's like an accumulative sort of thing. In fact, a little bit like, wash your face and orange juice, wash your face and orange juice, clean your teeth with bubble gum, so that it gets longer and longer and longer as you turn over the page. Like this, the bears get up and they climb over the wall, under the bridge, around the lake, up the hill, that kind of stuff. And I've found that I love reading that to my own children, and I'm now actually reading it to my grandchildren. So the book's transcended, you know, the generations, which is, I think, another lovely thing about children's music. I think children's music, if it's any good at all, if it has any real intrinsic value, will be quite naturally passed down to the next generation. I think that's the way it ought to be.
Under the Covers on Afternoons.
Entertainer Peter Coombs is our guest, talking books on 720 ABC Perth. Gillian, with you. Has there always been that connection between lyrics, song lyrics and prose?
Oh, yes, always. I'm a lover of the English language, and I think that if you write children's songs, lyrics are really important. You don't just dash off lyrics and think, oh, well, they're only three, it doesn't matter. And that is done by some children's songwriters. I mean, it's not many, but it is done. And I think that you have an obligation to actually really work at them, because it's lovely to actually make an album and feel really proud of the lyrics you've written. And most good children's songs have got really quite poetic lyrics anyway. So that's something I really work very hard at.
And we've talked about a couple of books, but poetry, are you a fan?
Oh, yes. Yes, I got turned on to Shakespeare by a wonderful English teacher called Peter Clancy when I was about 15. And it was a real sort of revelation, you know, my young boy in the middle of his teenage years, and suddenly English came alive because of a wonderful teacher. And it was just, I mean, in retrospect, demonstrated the value of great teachers. They really do, they do change your lives.
And I think, we've talked about this before, but Shakespeare is one of those things that you have to be able to hear aloud in your head, even if you're not speaking it aloud, to really love, I think.
Yes, I think it's wonderful to hear Shakespeare on the stage. I remember hearing that lovely Much Ado About Nothing, the film was made with Kenneth Branagh and Emma Thompson about 10 years ago. And it was just so joyous to hear the words spoken and then see these wonderful actors living the words on the screen. So, yeah, you're right. It's Shakespeare really has got to be sort of almost read aloud, said aloud.
We're Under the Covers on Afternoons.
Peter Coombe is with us. Now, I've got a few quick questions for you, Peter. Is there a book that if you could inflict your will on all the children of Australia that you would put on the school curriculum?
A particular book I've loved in the past few years is probably About a Boy, the Nick Hornby book, which I thought was also a superb film. That's a kind of an older children's book. It's almost like mid-teenage, really, but it's very quite sophisticated.
And what do you think, a high school child would get out of that?
Well, I think it's got that lovely, wry English sense of humour. I've always thought the Britain's great gift to the world really is their humour. And About a Boy is a wonderfully humorous story of a grown man, and this is also identified with this, Gillian. This is a grown man who spends all his days simply not working at all, living off his father's royalties because he wrote this incredibly successful Christmas song. And every year he goes into Waitrose or Tesco's or something, and he hears this Christmas song and he goes, oh, my God, there it is again. He kind of hates the song, but he loves living off the royalties. So I guess that part of that story I find really amusing. But the book itself is just a really interesting story, I think, of the relationship between this guy who meets this little boy called Marcus. But it's a long story.
And do you think it's more important, particularly for children of that age in their teens, to read because they love it or read because they're going to learn something?
I think most things like reading, literature, music, really the loving it is critical. The self-motivating aspect of the arts, I think, is really important. It'll have an educational outcome, but I tend to think that anything that's intrinsically good is naturally educational anyway. And I've had this strange thing over the years where sometimes people in schools or principals will say, well, do your songs have a message? And I say, well, some of them sort of have a message, but really what you should be asking is the song any good? And do your children like to sing? And do you think singing in schools is important? And I think the answer to all those questions is yes. So by definition, if the song is good, whether it's a serious song or a funny song, it's by definition, I think it's educational. That may have a message too, and if it does, that's fine. But I don't set about writing songs with hard messages. I think you, in a way, you almost devalue what you're doing if you set out to do that.
Under the Covers.
Is there a book or a type of book you would ban?
I think books that had expressed sexual violence in them, I think of actually no really value to anyone. I'm very opposed to violence anyway. As I said, I was a great Mandela, the Peter Paul Mary song about the pacifist. I found that an extremely inspiring song. So I think I naturally would want to ban books that are extremely violent. But then again, I think, well, would I ban them? I'm not sure. I think it would have to be very violent. I think there's a certain level of violence in books which is probably you need to read. But I'm uncomfortable with high levels of violence.
A book that's made you cry?
Shadowlands, which is the story of C.S. Lewis, the English literary person, of course, the writer of children's books. And I've also read his biography. I've also read the story of Shadowlands. And that book and that film make me cry every time I either read them or I see the film. My wife thinks I'm hopeless. there he goes again. But the film of Shadowlands, I would recommend anyone to see it. It's one of the most beautiful films that was directed by Richard Attenborough, who's also director of the Gandhi film. So the film and the book I just adore.
Oh, my goodness. I tell you what, me too, both the book and the film, and not the kind of, you know, pretty, delicate tear that rolls gently down your cheek, no. Like guttural kind of, you know, howling.
Oh, yes. This Anthony Hopkins' performance as Jack Lewis is just stunningly beautiful. I could barely cope with the first time I saw it. And the notion of that sense of a writer who doesn't actually know he's in love with someone. He's never been in love, so he doesn't even know what it is. It takes her getting cancer, his Joy, you know, Joy Gresham, who becomes his wife, to actually realise he actually loves her. And that's a very, very powerful part of the story.
And you read that sort of thing or you see it and then you spend the next few days weirdly going around and hugging your wife too hard.
Hugging my wife, yes, and my children and my grandchildren. Well, I love light books as well. I love light British comedies. I'm a particular fan of English comedy.
What makes you laugh?
You can probably guess I'm a huge fan of people like John Cleese. I think he's a comedy genius. But I enjoy Australian stuff too. I'm a huge fan of John Clarke, the Australian / New Zealand satirist. I think he's got to be the drollest man in the world. And I just love him for it. He's just brilliant. In fact, John Clarke, my favourite funny book would be a book by him called A Dag at My Table, which is a sort of a play on the Fred Dagg character. And it's what I call my favourite toilet book. I read it in the loo and I laugh every time I read it. It's just a wonderful book.
There's people, isn't there? People who read in the toilet and they know exactly what you're talking about, and people would just think that's really bad.
People say, what are you doing in there? And you think, well, I'm actually... Believe it or not, I'm still reading. Probably a terrible habit, but I do it anyway.
Oh, no, I used to have a bookshelf in my loo.
Yeah, some people do, don't they? Yeah. Some people do have bookshelves. I haven't got to that point, but I could easily have one.
Is there a book or a series of books that you're a little bit ashamed to have on your bookshelf? And I'm talking about, you know, how we like to put the ones that make, because we judge people on their book collections, I think, you know. So you put all the ones that make you look smart at the front, and then there's the ones that
make you look clever.
Yeah.
Impress your friends.
Which are the ones you hide at the back?
Well, do you know? I've always been a bit of a sucker for the Joanna Trollope series, which are kind of what you call like chick flicks, really. They're chick books. I mean, she's the English writer. She writes about relationships, and they're actually well written, but you'd have to say they're very kind of formularized. Every book is sort of the same, but I find they're really lovely wind down type books. I'm also a bit of a sucker for airline thrillers. As a way of kind of, I mean, I love flying, but I don't mind reading about planes that are going to crash,
plummeting,
which is kind of strange, I suppose.
The ground in a fiery ball of
metal. That's right. So it might be a book called Turbulence, which I might pick up and enjoy, because when I'm touring and I'm performing and I'm doing all the stuff you do as a performer and on a tour, you need wind down stuff at night time. So you need something light, like a light chick book or a thriller, maybe to wind you down. But you know, if I'm looking for something a bit more substantial, or something like a Martin Luther King book, or I read a bit of Bertrand Russell's biography, which I thought was quite wonderful too.
That'd be at the front. That'd make you look heaps smart.
Yeah, that would make look deeply impressive, wouldn't it? Yeah. Of course, Bertrand Russell's the guy who's famous for saying he only failed an exam because he knew more than the examiners. And that was discovered that was just absolutely true.
I'm not surprised to hear it. Now, we've asked you to choose a song to finish off with. What have you chosen, and tell us why?
Well, I wrote this new song called Quirky Berserky of the Turkey from Turkey. And it's the tale of a turkey who liked to travel. He became love-struck. He came across his turkey soulmate. They married, and they had four dear little turkeys called Hillary, Hope, Hattie, and Humphrey. May I introduce you to a friend?